Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, well, well. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Margaret Marshall, your host on Backyard Lab Race. I welcome you today. This is a wonderful day in my city. The little cold snap has disappeared, and we had a great day. So I hope you're just grabbing your chair in the backyard and getting ready, because we have an exciting lab race this evening. And I see that my co-host has joined me, so I want to welcome her. Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good evening. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, just chilling in the backyard. Do you have your favorite chair pulled out?
Oh yeah, I got my chair pulled. I'm relaxed. Actually, I'm relaxed. Got my legs kicked up, so I'm really relaxed.
Hey, now I just want you to feel those trade winds blowing across the island. Feel them? You can. I was jiving with the music. You should see me just getting up, down.
Oh my goodness. Well, see, that's how you keep slim with all that, you know, making movements that you do.
You know, that's right. Well, I just want to welcome our listeners. And this evening, we have an exciting evening. And I do want to mention that any listener online now that wants even to let us know they're there, they have to hit one on their keyboard, because we can't see the listeners anymore unless they do that. I know sometimes listeners don't want to interact. They just want to listen. We want to welcome them to do that. However, when they're ready to interact with us, if they hit one on their telephone, we'll know that they want to join the Labrish. So, Donna, do you want to say a welcome? You have anything to say? I'm so excited about our guest this evening. I'm just wiggling in my chair.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, just want to say hi, and I'm just looking forward to it myself, and I'm just looking for everybody. Hopefully, everybody will join in with us and labrish on our topic.
Right, because I think just about everybody, well, in my time, knows who Brand Nancy is. And one of the things that intrigued me about this special guest today is that although I grew up around Brand Nancy, and I was also sort of an action-type person, and I'm very intrigued with Spider-Man, because my grandkids are all over Spider-Man, as you can imagine. But I never thought of Brand Nancy as being the first Jamaican Spider-Man. So when I saw that in her bio, I went to put those two together. Because, you know, Brand Nancy is a spider. I don't know. Have you ever heard of that Brand Nancy,
Donna? No, I hadn't. My first time hearing about it. I'd heard of, like a Brer Rabbit, but I never heard of. No.
Right. Well, it came from our ancestors in Africa. And our guest this evening, Miss Broom Walker, is going to tell us all about her passion. And I'm telling you, this woman is passionate. First of all, she's a retired school teacher with a master's in education, and she's also a prize-winning art enamelist. And Phyllis, I was led to Phyllis by one of my relatives in Florida who knew about her accomplishments and have always been intrigued about her because, you see, as you know, Donna, I left Jamaica from 1959.
Mm-hmm.
And Phyllis was in Jamaica. She's younger than me, actually. You know, I bill myself as a senior, right?
Yeah.
She's a senior, but not a senior.
Passionate.
However, cousin in Florida tells me that just about everybody in Jamaica, you know, after I left, knew about Phyllis because she called her a trailblazer.
Oh.
And indeed she is. And I just want to let you know that I think she has joined us already, but I want to tell you a little bit about, she is very, very interesting because not only is she active in the arts, I mean, the art of enameling is something special, but to be, as she calls herself, the keeper of the Anansi flame is it's so meaningful in terms of our culture.
Mm.
As we know, like the rest of the world, you know, the culture in my country as well as several others, I'm sorry, is sort of changing. And we're not doing the same things like we used to at the same way we used to do it, you know, because before the young people had television, and things like that, we had storytelling. And we know that storytelling is so meaningful because the teller of the story can infuse the story with passion. You know what I mean, Donna?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I can tell by just speaking with Phyllis that the passion that she puts into everything she does. So I see that Phyllis has joined me. So I'm going to just say to our listeners, by the way, you're in the backyard, listeners, and we get excited now and then, so bear with us. She's coming on in a few minutes. I'm trying to get my little, here she is, listeners. Phyllis, welcome to the backyard. Are you there, Phyllis? Oh, I didn't open. My mic is my little mouth. Okay, there we are. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen. Phyllis, the keeper of the Anansi story.
Anansi
flame.
The spider. The first Spider-Man. Him come over on the slave ship from Africa to these lands. Look at him. A tiny spider. Him could fit in the palm of your hands. Close your eyes and take his magic and stretch up into a tall, handsome black man. Now, while all the other black men working hard night and day, like Garrett A. Morgan, the African-American who invented the traffic signals that are used to save lives all over the world every day, Anansi said, me just go skylark fool around and play. And Nancy look out and see how the slave master getting richer and richer and richer. And the slaves getting poorer and poorer and poorer. And him say, me not work anyway. Listen to Anansi's story. Hear about him tricky ways. Sometimes him win, sometimes him lose, but always him get up to try again another day. Because like all of we, and Nancy's a survivor in every way.
Wow! Hear, hear!
Here I am with him in the backyard, ready to labrish.
Oh, well, welcome, welcome, Phyllis. I'm so excited to have you, and I'm sure that our chat room is lighting up.
And Donna, you say you haven't heard about Anansi's stories, but a lot of them are called Miss Nancy in the States.
Oh, okay.
Because
yeah.
Anansi, you see, had plenty names. We have at this time to pay homage to Miss Lou, our great Jamaican storyteller, who spelled Anansi, A-N-A-N-C-Y. I use the spelling A-N-A-N-S-I. And there are at least four different variations on the word. And the whole idea of these trickster tales, as they're called, I don't call them that. I call them tales of survival.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the beginning, back in Africa, Anansi was no trickster. Anansi actually was thought of by many as the son of the great Nyame. And Nyame was the sky god. So you see, he didn't come from lowly beginnings. But just as many Africans who were princes, mathematicians, all sorts of skills that they had got changed into slaves. So it was that Anansi, on arriving in Jamaica, he had to use his wits to survive. And so it is that these tales became known as trickster tales. But I have reclaimed the true meaning of these changes, and I speak always of Anansi as a survivor.
Wonderful. That it's interesting that you're bringing this to our consciousness, because, you know, as kids growing up, we just, the story, although it always had a meaning and a positive meaning as I remembered it, it was just sort of our story. But the connection that you have made, you know, with this survival portion of the telling of the stories. And I must be very honest with you, Phyllis. I did not realize that the Anansi stories had an African origin.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I really didn't when I was there in Jamaica.
No,
and you are the one that has brought that to me, because I don't know if I wasn't paying attention or what, but I love them. I always loved hearing them. But, you know, I didn't really make that connection.
I don't think any of us made many connections at that time, unless you were caught up in a sort of movement.
Right,
that was the Back to Africa movement. And at that time, when I was growing up, my eldest brother was very caught up with this whole notion of Africa. And we had a man, Douglas, I think his name was, I'm not sure, who was possibly one of the first persons to come home to Jamaica and put on African wear and say, well, this is our past and we should start honoring it. And many people laughed at Marcus Garvey when he started saying we should do something. But my father was not one of those persons. And always in my home I heard the phrase from Marcus, which was up mighty race. So I grew up with this consciousness always, and as I grew, I learned more and more, because in my garage at home, they would have the Young Socialist League having meetings and talking about the African consciousness.
Oh,
so I knew all about that, and Nkrumah and people like that who were saying we should reach out and make links. And so when I came abroad, it was quite easy for me because as soon as you travel out from Jamaica, then you face racism and you have
right.
to make decisions. So I just looked at it and said, well, you know, the entire world, because for me, many people might differ, but I look at racism as just an extension of the evil that is in human beings. Because as a storyteller, I know so many stories that the same themes resound from culture to culture to culture that I understand and know because I've studied a lot of history and I see the same evil being reenacted over and over in different groups.
So what I think I hear you saying, Phyllis, is that there might be even people that are not necessarily black like us, but they have racism or what would seem like racism within their groups. Is that what you're saying?
This is what I'm saying, that we have all suffered,
mm-hmm.
all groups. For example, just briefly, we can speak of genocides. The Armenian people,
mm-hmm.
they still not been resolved because the Turkish people will not say this was done, but millions of them were wiped out.
Right,
we
right.
We all know the story of the Jewish people. It's now Passover. We all
mm-hmm.
know the story of the Rwandan genocide.
Right.
These are blacks to blacks all over the world. When we look out at the world, if we can find one single race
mm-hmm.
that has not done anything that is heinous, as criminal.
Right,
as
right.
Stubborn.
Because the French used to do it to their own people in the
uh-huh.
old days. You know, the English did it to their own people.
Yep.
It's interesting.
Yep. You only have to think about back in the day when Charles Dickens was writing. You
mm-hmm.
know, he wasn't writing because the people were being good to the poor. And
mm-hmm.
at the start of the Industrial Age, the treatment that the poor English got from the so-called upper class
mm-hmm.
was unbelievable. And
right.
it was all put down as being God's will that they were born superior.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I like to think of it as just a fatal flaw. So when I got here, I looked out at it and I thought, well, I'm not wasting any of my time on this,
mm-hmm.
you know, because if I was an ugly slave woman, owner of slaves, and I had a slave looking like Beyonce in my backyard, and my husband was down there every night in the chicken coop, as they say.
Oh, my goodness.
I
got you.
So there's a great, great book, Cane River. One of the most extraordinary accounts of slavery days in the States, because it really deals with the psychology of being absolutely powerless. And we are not in that situation today.
Amen.
We're not in that situation. So I did not allow myself to think of a victim when I met it, but I got on with my life and said, well, I'm going to be the best person I can be, because as we have heard, the best deterrent to racism, sexism, and ageism is excellence in whatever you do.
Amen.
Yes. Yes.
And I must say that you are doing so many things, and I'm sure, and even in your past, you have done them with such passion, because when did you leave Jamaica? What year?
I left Jamaica in the early 60s, and I came here because my girlfriend had left Jamaica and come here to Queen's University.
Now, here being, I should tell our listeners.
Toronto.
Right. Well, you're listening to Backyard Lavrish, and our guest this evening is actually calling us from Toronto.
That's right. This is my adopted land, homeland, and I have lived here now for many, many years, happily, and I can't think of any other place I'd rather be, except maybe Hawaii every now and again.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
So I took all the opportunities that I got when I got here. But the major difference is that I came here with a very excellent education from Jamaica. And I truly believe that education is the key to a better life.
Definitely. I agree wholeheartedly. And that's why on this particular, in the backyard here, we're always encouraging our listeners, you know, especially those with children or young people listening to us, that we're always highlighting people who have this passion for life and passion for education. You know, it's so important. It really doesn't matter what color you are, but especially for people of, you know, of the black race. It's
yep.
important because knowledge is power, and you know when you know something, you just automatically feel better about yourself. When you know you know whatever your discipline is, when you are the best that you can be in it, it just gives you so much more power.
Certainly, and that is missing from many of the children because, as I say to everybody, your child should be reading well by the time your child is 7.
Uh-huh.
And this is not something you should just leave up because I heard the great Miss Oprah Winfrey saying one day, and I tape Oprah every day, so I have watched her for years, but
right.
she made this statement that the prison population of the United States is planned for based on the failure rate in grade 4. Grade 4.
Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, the audience sort of, and she said, "Bet you didn't know that."
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And our co-host Donna is like us, very passionate about early education.
Wonderful, Donna.
Yes,
yeah.
She really is. And I admire that in her because a lot of younger people, and Donna is a young mother, are not really tuned into the fact that the foundation, just like the foundation of the highest skyscraper, has to be started first, it has to be planned, and it has to be secure for the size of the building that's going to go up.
That's right.
So the importance of the early education is it should not be overlooked.
And it should not be left to anybody and just say, well, I'm taking my child to school, so that's it.
Mm-hmm.
This should be a nightly business that parents are involved with because, they, as I tell people over and over, we only have 26 little letters in the alphabet. And somebody did the work a long time ago. Putting them into words. So just to read to your child for 10 minutes each night and have them read a little part of the story and have this love affair beginning with English, which is the working language of the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
what it is.
Yeah. Well, I just want to add right here, this is Don, I just want to add, you know, that statement that you made about the prisons in fourth grade, that was something that I'd gone to an event at my youngest daughter, she's in kindergarten. I went to a reading event that they had there, and that was one of the things that the assistant principal talked about was that how important early educational process was here, particularly in the United States, and that if a young man didn't make it in terms of reading by the time he was in fifth grade, that he was pretty much lost after that point going into middle school, and they were seeing that was the largest number of they were. Hello?
Donna,
yes.
We lost you for a minute. You're back
okay.
on.
Am I on? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think maybe your arrow's like on the button. I don't know. But at any rate, what it happened was that he was indicating that they could determine immediately from elementary school how many young men were going to drop out based upon their reading level. Not read by the time they had left elementary school, which is fifth grade here, then they were pretty much doomed to not want to read because their didn't have that machoism. They didn't want to appear uncool, so they were never going to try if they didn't get partnered up with a mentor or someone that would be privately teaching them to catch up, you know, with their reading level. And it was really kind of sad when you thought about it that all of these young men were gonna, they were gone. They were over 50-something% of them were doomed immediately. And I just felt like, wow, I mean, that is, but then when you think about it, most of the child's brain is already developed by the time they're 5 years old, and that's why they tell you to teach a child a foreign language, you know, before that time period or during that time period, because they can still absorb and their brain is still growing and they can still learn pretty quickly. And, you know, not to say that you can't afterwards, because I believe everyone can, you know, can accomplish and can do, particularly if someone, you know, sits down and pays attention to them and gives them the time and dedication that they need. But, I mean, when you really think about it, I think about slaves that it was illegal for them to read. And one of the first things that a lot of slaves did was say, I want to learn how to read, not I want to, you know, learn how to do, you know, X, Y, and Z, or I want to sit down and learn how to read and write because I know that this is a foundation for me. And so there were older people that sat down and for the first time in their lives were taught, you know, how to read and write. So it's definitely possible, you know, it's just that it's going to take them quite a bit more than it would take, you know, for a child. And the thing about it, again, is how much knowledge you have about the resources that are out there. There are, for instance, for me, one of the things that I do is there, you can go online through the public library or different sources and actually bring up the books and let them read to your child, and it points the words out for you. So for those parents that are too busy, they can, you know, they can have this done. But also just want to say, according to, I was looking at what you all were, you know, the whole idea of the Anansi, and I said, you know, it sounds so much like Br'er Rabbit. I remember hearing stories about, you know, Br'er Rabbit or Bro Rabbit. When I was coming up in the country folks used to sit and they would talk about Br'er Rabbit, and Br'er Rabbit was always, you know, thinking ahead. You know, he always was ahead of the program and tricking someone into something. But in reality, there was always a moral to the story. And it was a way of teaching you in such a fun way, you know, that you wanted to be Br'er Rabbit. You didn't want to be the person that was on the other side.
But, Donna, the whole idea behind these things, people find ways to survive. It might be very small things, like on Monday up here, we were just in shock because we suddenly had snow and it had gone back to winter.
Yeah.
Now, I had a choice to say, oh, my gosh, my Easter bonnet is going to be ruined on Sunday. I had to go out at 7 a.m., and I just started pretending it was a January day. You see?
That would be a good day in January.
And so it would be a good day in January instead of comparing it. So all these groups found the things because the little spider, the little rabbit, overcame the adversities, and that strengthened them to get up and make it another day.
Yeah.
Although they were basically powerless.
Right.
They could look at these little creatures and actually laugh at night times when they took their tired, worn out bones to sit on the beaten pieces of board or straw that they had to sit on.
Yeah.
And buoy their spirits with the hope that just as these creatures survived, a tiny little spider and little Br'er Rabbit, they too would survive. And that is a testimony to the spirit of the human being. Just as people all over the world who are suffering, I'm sure the people in Darfur, they have some way of buoying their spirits in spite of all the horrors that they're facing every day.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of like, it's particularly in the country where, and in Georgia, where there was slavery and all, they had to tell whatever it was, whatever type of stories, in some other way. It was another way of translating or giving you information, but not directly saying whatever it was that was on their mind.
That's right. They weren't stupid.
Well, I want to remind our listeners again that you're listening to Backyard Lavish. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, And this evening, we are excited to have Phyllis with us. Phyllis is a resident, should I say a citizen, Phyllis, of Toronto?
Yes, yes, I'm a citizen.
Oh, wonderful.
Canada. I'm a Canadian citizen.
Canadian citizen, but she's born and raised in Jamaica, and she has been the keeper of the Anansi flame because from what I gather just from reading about her and interacting with her is that her whole life is a story. And she wraps everything with that story like passion and delivers it. So whether she's in the classroom, I'm sure, Phyllis, when you were in the classroom, I just imagine most of whatever you're teaching the kids came in the form of a story.
Well, I must tell you this, that those were some of the happiest days of my life. And my students, we were also, you know, just caught up with work and not fun before work. I just let them know that learning is hard work. But once you understand, what joy, what fun. And I took a lot of Caribbean ways into my classroom. For example, times table, we would all start going around the room singing, twice ones are two, twice two
really?
Are four, twice threes are six. And everybody knew their times table because I've never figured out how you can do a division without knowing your times table.
That's right. This new math just had me puzzled. And I remember the old days because, you know, I took my children back to Jamaica in 1970 when my daughter was born because I wanted my children to have that foundation, you know, the kindergarten foundation.
Yes.
Where I remember, you know, your twice ones are two and how we would go with the spelling and everything at an early age. And I think that really made a difference for me. It made a big difference in their lives.
Well, to me, it's just a waste of very, very valuable time in many, many schools all over the world that you should take children at the time when their brains are wide awake and ready for learning and just play. Well, it's really something that goes on in schools for poor children because I've been in schools where parents are paying like $30,000 a year, and I can assure you they're working very early. And I've investigated all of these things, so I don't know. As I said to Miss Lou one day, I said, Miss Lou, I have to keep on telling your stories because you did the work and brought them to us gathered many of them, and you are speaking in the dialect that only Jamaicans understand, where when I go out to schools, I can talk to the children in both standard English and a little piece of dialect because Toronto is a very multicultural city. And Miss Lou said to me, we need all the people who want to be storytellers to keep telling these stories. And so I started marketing myself as a keeper of the Anansi flame. And in my safety deposit box, I have a lovely note from her, ending, of course, with Walk Good, which we know
is
her signature. But this whole business of educating the young, I have no idea why people make babies and don't look at them as the most precious possession and start very early and feel they should just entrust them to strangers who are paid.
Government, the city. I mean, I'm really appalled at that, too. You know, it's everybody else's responsibility.
If I might add, I'd just like to say that one of the things that was asked of me was, give an idea with a principal at my middle daughter, she's 13, she wanted to nominate me for the president of their PTA, and I've never even been the vice president or chair yet. I think I need to start there. And she was saying, well, you know, we really would like a better support of the parents, and we think that you could help us with that. And I said, I think a big part of the problem is that, again, you know, it's the starting point. You know, if you start at a point where you maybe don't even finish school, And then you have children, you know, that maybe took you out of school because you started having them maybe in middle school, because last year they had 15 girls in middle school, and we're talking, you know, the oldest would probably be maybe 14 years of age, and they had 15 girls that had babies. And so when you have 15 girls that have babies, and I know at least one of them was on her second child, and then they're going to ultimately maybe drop out, but they're going to have this responsibility of this child one way or another, then you have babies raising babies, and they're really not having a huge role model in terms of, you know, this is what you need to do. They might know it in the back of their brain, but they're so busy walking through life and getting through these new struggles that they've, you know, heaped on themselves, that they don't make, you know, they don't sit down and read to their children. They don't, they feel like, you know what, I got to give them to the teacher, and they feel almost intimidated by the whole educational process because they've never completed it themselves.
But I certainly believe that there are no simple answers to any of these problems.
Right.
Because a child should not be bringing up a child. We have a situation right now in Great Britain where I think a 12-year-old boy has gotten a 15-year-old girl pregnant, and he was saying he really didn't know what he was doing. They were just trying this thing, and, you know, here we could have told him what trying these things bring. We have the story of Adam and Eve. But I really feel that we're all just wringing our hands, and there could be far more small groups of people helping. There are so many retired people who could be doing something. I speak of Toronto. There are a lot of us, I think, who need to give thanks to our makers that we had families to inculcate the right values in us. And so have compassion for these girls who are seeking out to be loved and think that the only way they can be loved, it is by turning into baby mothers, as they use the phrase, and they are not looking at anything but programs that show them women as being totally sexualized beings, and there is absolutely no way that many churches are filling the gaps.
No.
And I look at so many churches here in Toronto that, you know, on the weekends, if we could have some charismatic person who would just get up and say, let us have some classes to teach these children, because I am sure all the girls who left my classroom over the years I've taught, not one of them ever got pregnant, and I was teaching many poor children because I would start in on them in grade two. I would laugh and say, oh, what a foolish thing it is when a girl gets pregnant and she doesn't have any way to get a good job, you know. And I'd make up this story about this girl who...
Here we go with the story. I knew it was coming.
And I said... Me, I am telling you, I'm looking at girls. The smartest thing you can do is to get an education, because with an education, you can always get a job. With a job, you can always have a quality of life that you cannot have if you have to be begging somebody to give you a $20 this week or so on and so forth. And every one of them today, they are childless. Or they got married. In July, I'm going to the wedding of one boy. I mean, and I spoke to the boys just the same. I said, don't be bringing any babies into the world till you can support them.
Mm-hmm.
But they all have this idea that there's something wonderful about making babies. And I even had a picture of a prisoner with, you know, one of these great big ball and chain on his leg. And I would say to the girls, that's what happens when you have a baby and you don't have a home.
Oh, my goodness.
You. Because a boy can always say, this is not my baby, but you never, ever can.
Yeah.
So these stories, you know, and then sometimes I would say, And they come to you when they like you, and they tell you the most ridiculous things. I remember two in grade four coming to tell me they had decided to have sex. You know?
Grade what?
Grade four.
Oh, my goodness.
So I said to them, well, you know, it's really good that you're thinking before you act, because, you know, so-and-so, so we're walking around this yard and we're talking about this, and I'm saying, well, you have to check it and look at it. Of course, I know them not doing anything like that, so I'm telling them that, because, you know, there are all these diseases out there, you know, and if you get any of them, the whole world would know what you have been doing, because some of them get eat off a piece of your nose. I saw a movie about syphilis and gonorrhea that, you know, the people's noses got in there. And it's, by the time I'm finished with them, real sneaky like me, saying, we don't think we're going to try now. I said, you know, I think it's a good idea, but you can't just say you're not going to try. The thing is, you can't be in situations where you're alone with anybody, because Mother Nature has put an urge in us that we will want to have sex if you're in some dark corner with some boy. So let's just save until, you know, we go out with our girlfriends and boyfriends, laugh, have fun, but go home. I thought, hopefully to some parents.
Yes.
If we don't start early with them, because they're being sexualized with the clothes, with the television set, all of that, then that is who they're listening to.
Yeah.
It's too late when they're in high school.
Well, I just wanted to add, and I don't know if, you know, a lot of our listeners know it or not, but I was looking online and I found a lot of information, some of which I thought was pretty interesting, that you have a Bachelor of Arts degree, then you have a Bachelor's of Education, then you have a Master's of Education, and then you actually have a degree, is that English as a second language specialist?
Well, I've done a lot of, as I said, I didn't allow myself to think about racism or any of these things except on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday I would do that. All through the week I was working and studying. I've always been a person who is studying. Right now I'm studying my VISTA, which is driving me crazy. I get up on Wednesday mornings, which I did this morning. I drove to the class to study. I truly believe a phrase that I heard was, learning is for life. And as long as you're living, keep learning. Most of our teachers up here, you're required to have the Bachelor in Education. So you'd get your BA or BSc, and then you'd get the Bachelor's in Education. And then I decided, I had a wonderful, wonderful mentor who, from the minute she laid eyes on me, I see her blue eyes twinkling now. She was quite determined that I was going to become a principal, so she thought, do your master's in education, and then we have the principal's qualification courses up here, part one and part two, so I did all that. Now, when I was ready for that, plus my ESL training, when I was ready for that, a friend who lives what I call a unstructured life, because she's a film director, we had gone out for lunch, and she said to me, you know, when you're talking about your life in the classroom, you're so animated, you're laughing, you're enjoying it, and the only thing I ever hear you saying that if you become a principal, you'd make more money. Are you sure you want to be a principal? And I went away and I thought to myself, you know, I don't really want to be locked up in any of these offices, you know, dealing with adult problems, because it's a very, very difficult job.
Yeah.
Because, as you know, you have all these parents. I was in a school telling stories once, and afterwards these boys, they were being not nice to another boy who they thought was gay. So I said to them, you cannot speak that way to this boy in front of me. So they said, you know, he's a, you know. So I said, we've all been made, if we're told we're made in God's perfect image, then this person has a right to express themselves as they have been born. So I went to the principal and I said, you know, I had a quite interesting conversation with these young people. And I would volunteer once a week to come in. We could have a lunchtime chit-chat. So then he said to me afterwards, it only takes one parent to complain, and that's it. So their hands are tied in many cases. And one good thing about studying to become a principal, it is that I have a great deal of empathy now for many principals with the problems they see in lots of cases that like to be more strict or more stern with some of the children. I'm sure you've all seen the movie Lean on Me. And I don't know many schools that you could do that with and get away with it. Because you remember that woman was determined to get him out of the job.
So we're
living in a complicated world, and I always look at my 10 fingers and say, this business of educating the children of poverty, it is like, it has like 10 different prongs, you know, like fingers of things stopping progress. And unless people, this is why I do this now. Everywhere I meet black children, I just say to them, if they're misbehaving or anything, I say to them, come here. I said, I want to tell you a little story.
There we go again.
Story. Every culture draws their God looking just like them.
Mm.
If you look at the Buddha, he looks just like his own people. I said, because we were enslaved, we didn't get to draw our God looking just like us. But when you go home, look in the mirror. Your God looks just like you, and he's only expecting the best from you. Do you hear me? And they're kind of stunned, you know. I said, he looks just like you. Because I'm not getting into any religious conversations with them. I'm just telling them what I really believe,
because their
mother or father might be quite happy thinking that their God has blue eyes. I don't want to even think along those lines. So I just share that in the child's ears and they can go think about it, because I don't think at any time I can ever stop trying to make a difference in the lives of these children.
Isn't that something? I mean, it's something to hear you say that, and I tell people that all the time. I think that as an adult, as you walk into a child's life, you really do have a responsibility to plant a seed or at least leave a positive something in their life if you can do so.
Because sometimes that's all they need. You don't know when something that you have said to a child resonates deeply inside of them. And because I go into a lot of school storytelling, I always, if I look out and see anybody, or even on the street, I was on the subway one day when I was across from a tall young man, and I could just feel his pain all the way over there. So it was a long trip. And I got up when I was close to, you know, the end of the line, and I said to him, you seem so unhappy. What is the matter? And he told me he had gone for a job interview, and he didn't get it.
And
then I said to him, he said like he had been to about 10 or something like that. I said,
right.
No, you need to get smart in the world. And I am looking at you. You must understand this. Because you're very handsome, you're dressed expensively. There is a fine line between looking as if you need a job and dressing better than the boss.
Well, I want to just tell you that we have one of our callers that apparently have a question or a comment. But before I open up the mic to our caller at 718, it seems like 654. I just want to read something that really stood out to me, Phyllis.
Yes.
And it says here, this is you talking, words are things of beauty to me. Mm-hmm. A wonderful story, a poem that captures the essence of an experience and the joy of sharing this love with an audience brings me great joy. And that, I found that very touching. And I, as you mentioned about, our daughter mentioned about leaving a child with something positive and how much just sometimes one one statement from anybody, whether it's a child or an adult, can make a difference in your life.
Oh, yeah.
I thought about what your friend said to you that made you think about whether you wanted to be a principal or not.
Yes.
You remember? Yes. Because she said that to you, it made you think. So I'm going to open up the mic now to my caller. I see they're anxiously waiting. And I'm going to open up the mic. You're on, caller, from 718-654. Good evening. This is Margaret,
evening.
And welcome to the backyard.
Good evening, Ms. Marshall. Hi, Donna.
Hi,
this
Sharon.
Is your,
How are you doing?
Long-lost caller. And I'm just listening to the show with such interest. It's a wonderful show. I just wanted to say hi to Miss Broomwalker as well.
Hello.
And just to make a comment that
yes.
I think what it is with our children, we need to just be vested in them and invest in them. So many people, oh, I can't be bothered, I don't have time, these kids don't have any manners. But Miss Walker, your spirit is such that you can reach out to people. And that's, I think, what we all need to do. Because
thank
the
you.
Story that you just told of you sensing this man's pain on the subway and you went up to him, so many people would have just gotten off the train.
Mm,
and possibly he could have been so dejected that he would have gone and done himself some harm. Had you not spoken to him?
I never thought about it, but I just had to talk to him because I could see he was young. You know, I don't even think he was 22 because he told me he was going to one of the community colleges and he had just graduated, you know.
Mm.
So I shared a story with him because I'd gone for a job and, I mean, I am very astute and I realized this woman wasn't going to give me the job, but it was like a pool of people interviewing. And I was dressed in a pair of Ferragamo shoes, which are very expensive shoes up here. And the funny thing about this whole why I'm telling you this is that I had a friend who was working as a maid with this extraordinarily wealthy woman who would buy these Ferragamos and wear them once and just throw them away. And she would throw them away on me. So, and I've always been able to sew very well. And I was in my beautiful Vogue suit. And she just took one look at me and decided I wasn't getting the job.
Mm.
Now, I overheard somebody saying she wasn't going to be there the next day. So we used to have some stores here called Byway, which I can't think of an American equivalent, but let's just put it, it's a budget kind of store. So I left straight from there, and I went off, and I went into Byway and bought a budget dress and some shoes. I think they call them espadrilles or something. And I went back the next day when I knew she wasn't going to be there, and I got the job. You see?
Ha! Clever! Interesting.
A lot of times we have to remember there's something called jealousy and envy in the world. It's not necessarily racism.
Right. That's right. I want to remind our listeners in the chat room, and we have listeners on the board, if you would like to make a comment or interact with our very special guest this evening, do hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll know that you want to join the Labrish. I'd also like to ask Donna to give out the number. I got a caller on the other line who needed the number to call in. So, Donna, would you give the call-in number out for me, please?
Yes, it's 718-766-4558, 718-766-4558. And I just want to ask Ms. Broomwalker, what is the founder and first president of the CEA, and it says now renamed, and also can you talk to us a little bit about, you say that you tell your stories using your enamels, or the spoken word. What are the enamels?
Well, many years ago, I used to go down to the United States to study this thing, enameling, which is a process of fusing glass to a metal.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I thought to myself, why am I traveling to New York City, staying in the Y, to study with somebody for a week when I could start an association here in Toronto, Canada? And so I did, and became the founder of the Canadian Enameling Association, now renamed to incorporate the French element, because as a bilingual country, it is now Enamel Art Canada and the French part of it. And what that is, you have a kiln, which is about the size of a microwave oven, and you apply the enamel powder, which looks like grains of salt, roughly. You have it as fine as talcum powder, but generally we are using 80 mesh, which is about the size of fine table salt. And with a little sifter, you apply it to a copper shape, or silver gold, depending on how much money you want to spend. And you put it in the kiln, and the heat of the kiln, which is about 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit, causes these little glass beads to melt, fuse, and bond themselves permanently to the copper. And you begin that way, preparing the copper as a painter would prepare a canvas, and on that you create your art. So here in Toronto, about 10 years ago, I won one of the art for public places, and I did a large mural. And when you're doing a large enamel mural, you're putting together sections of copper, just as someone would do a mosaic. So this piece had about 278 6-inch squares.
Wow.
It's a complex, large piece honoring two subjects. Garrett A. Morgan, so on both ends of the panel, there's a map of Africa and the traffic signals sort of superimposed, showing that the scattered African strength remained in this African man. And in the center, a woman, because it always amused me about Atlas, a man holding up the world, and I see women out there.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to put a woman in the center panel.
Uh-huh.
So it's permanently on display here in Toronto at a library called the Maria A. Shuka Library at Eglinton and Northcliffe. And the nice thing about it was that the artist had a say in where the piece would be donated by the city. And I am just passionate about libraries. I am in awe of libraries. And here in Toronto, we have one of the finest library systems in the world. So they deserve all the pluses. We can have homework clubs. You can volunteer there. And they try in every way to create situations that children can come in and learn. And this is what I'm saying. If every black person just said, I'm going to help one child, just one, if they don't have any children, because there are a lot of us out here with no children, you don't even have to take them to your home to, you know, get in any challenging situations. You can just say, I'm meeting them at the library here in Toronto. I know this can be done. And you say, okay, right after school, arrange with the parents and go there and help a child. What a blessed thing to do.
Mm-hmm. What a great idea, Phyllis. I think that is wonderful. We have a couple minutes. We have a few more minutes left. I want you to tell me about raisin in the rice pudding.
Where do you get that from?
Oh, no, just tell our listeners again. Our listeners, you're listening to Backyard Labbers. And if you want to interact with us, you need to hit 1 on your telephone so we know that you want to join the Labbers. So tell us, Phyllis.
People say there's no such thing as luck, and I don't agree with that statement. I think you keep on preparing yourself in whatever is of interest to you. And so when the opportunity arises, you're ready. But sometimes you can be just minding your own business and something just falls in your lap.
Can I just interact right here? That's how the universe works.
There
you know, when we are prepared, as one of the saying goes, when the student is ready,
yes,
the teacher will appear.
Yes, and I believe that, because I was just minding my own business, and just as I'm talking to you here, I was talking to a talk show host when people started saying, you should have Phyllis in there to when you're on holidays. And so it was that I became the first woman in Toronto to have a talk show. And CFRB 1010, which was a huge radio station back then in the 80s. And every Saturday at 12 o'clock, I'd stop everything because I was on from 7 to 10 at night. And
wow,
you would get all kinds of things. People were just waiting for me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So that went on for about 2 years. But it was just when I started my teaching career. Always I've had to make choices. What is it that really gives me the greatest joy? Because I'm really, if I'm going to talk about making a lot of money, I've had a lot of opportunities to make a lot of money. Just when I retired in 2005, City TV, which is one of our largest television stations here, they came to my classroom and did, a sort of wrap-up of my career, had me almost in tears. And a few months after that, I was called to City TV, and I was offered a position twice a month as educational specialist. I couldn't do it because I had planned my life for such a long time that I had given the first portion of my life to my parents. The second portion to my husband was passed away. And I just want this last portion of my life to be free of bosses. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you should get involved with something unless you're going to give your 100%, sometimes even 300% asked of you. Because a lot of these kind of jobs, they'll just say to you, you know, there's some benefit concert or something, and they want you there to represent the station. So we had a good partying, and, you know, I have maintained good connections with them because that's a prudent thing to do. But I really don't want a boss anymore. I want to be free. If I want to say I am working with a group of children, or I want to say the next 2 years I'm only staying with starting a little something in a library somewhere, I want to do that. Right now, I every single year I take 2 black children all through my school years, and I take them to things like we have a big thing up here, the CNE, the exhibition, and, the rides and that kind of thing. And so I feel it is important that those of us who have received something, and there's nothing wrong with me, I'm healthy, I've got a reasonable little life, so I can afford to help somebody else, you know.
That's wonderful. I can hear that, you know, you're saying so many things that really tie in with not only a purposeful life, but living, but following your passion, you know, doing what is most meaningful to you,
yes,
and not just for the money.
Yes. It has to, you have to, I heard somebody put it this way, you have to have a reason for getting up in the morning.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So if you're not in love with what you're doing, why are you getting up doing it? I go into a place and I can tell a young woman who really, really hates the job, and I really feel like saying to her one day, you're not that old that you can't leave this job. Because
really?
If she would leave it, there might be the right thing waiting for her out there, you know?
Yes.
The other part of that is that a lot of people who are in that consciousness are not don't really know what they want, and they are not preparing for whatever. You mentioned before about luck, but there was a saying about luck is that that is when you are prepared that luck. It seems like luck comes to you, but it's because of the preparation that you put into life that attracts whatever you are thinking is luck. That's when the connection is made.
Well, my
so
dear
it makes
Oprah
a lot
says
of
there's
sense.
No such thing as luck. Oprah
right.
says luck is when opportunity and
preparation
come together.
Right.
I've heard her say that over
and of
and
course,
over,
impulse. Impulse has a great part in that, too.
Yes.
Following
your gut.
Preparation, opportunity, and impulse, because you've got to have that impulse to move.
Right.
That's an interesting thing, Donna, because I like that. I think it's impulse, because if I get a feeling, you know, about something, I usually will follow through. So I must write that down, impulse.
Well, I must tell you that that was from Sharon.
Sharon, yes.
Oh, Sharon, thank you.
Sharon, will you tell Phyllis a little bit about yourself?
Oh, my goodness. I just love this, your spirit, Phyllis, and I'm definitely going to go and do some research on you, because I think you're a wonderful raconteur, just like Marshall.
I want you to tell her something about you.
No, you know I'm very shy. I'm not going to
Well, ask her about you.
The reason that I'm really drawn and really enjoying this labyrinth tonight is because you're talking about words, and words are my passion. And I'm one who's passionate about education. I'm a lifelong learner, too, because I think you're never too old to stop learning.
Never.
And it's so funny that this labyrinth really demonstrates that, because I'm learning from Miss Marshall.
And let me tell you, I'm learning just from speaking. You know, I've always had a passion for history, and I'm telling you this whole thing of researching. And incidentally, I wanted to make one thing known to most of our listeners, is that most of my guests I have never met. I've only had two interviews with two live guests who are people that I know. You know that, Donna, beside Donna, who I know very well. But it's just everyone else, and I've had several guests on the show, of people that I've either met because of the show, because of something going on here in Atlanta where both Donna and I live, or my research. That's how I found Sharon. And Phyllis, well, my cousin did tell me about her, and then, you know, I started to do some searching, and we started to correspond. Same thing with Dr. Lumsden that I've featured a lot of times.
Nice.
And most people. But as you talk about learning, you know, I am learning so much, and I think it's just rejuvenating me. I feel like, as we'd say in Jamaica, a gal of 16.
That's
not
right.
A young
That's
gal.
Right.
Well,
you are a mother young girl.
There's a great time management book by a man, Alan Lakin, and I almost fell off my chair. I was down in New York, and one of my nieces, Karen, she's doing her PhD in nursing, and she had brought home all these textbooks, and I said to her, I cannot believe that this book is still out there. And they've recommended it for you. And he says, at all times, you should be asking yourself this question. What is the best use of my time?
Oh, man,
now,
I know that phrase.
Don't leave off the now, because the now is extremely important. What is the best use of my time now?
Right.
You can come home and you think, oh, I'm so tired, I can't do a single thing, like washing the dishes or those kind of things. And your good friend called, and you can just pick yourself up, go out on the street, and you're all invigorated. And if you had just put that same principle in your head, and I'm a great, great fan of Louise Hayes, and she has a phrase that you use to stop yourself from having the same old tape running around and around in your mind. I love and approve of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I love and approve of myself. And it energizes you, because beating up on yourself does not help you to find any energy. But it's one of the most extraordinary phrases that you could use just when you're feeling that way. Instead of saying, oh, you know, I haven't achieved, I haven't done it. You use that to buoy your spirit and pick yourself up. She's an extraordinary woman. She is. So,
okay. Well, I see we have a caller from 786, and I just want to tell you, if you want to interact with the Labyrinth, just hit 1 on your keyboard. We welcome you, and we welcome all our other callers and our guests listening online. And I do want to say one thing that I know for sure, and that when a person is living a purposeful life, then everything you do really should be determined as to, is that fulfilling your purpose? And a lot of times when we have decisions to make, as to whether we do A or B, if we would just take our time to figure out, is A or B going to put me closer to my goal?
Yep.
And whichever one is how you choose. So we always, it's always in our best interest if we take a moment to think before we do or
yep.
before we act. And I just want to tell Sankar listeners again for being in the backyard. And I want to, you did not answer me, Phyllis, about Raisin and the Rice Pudding. Was that the name of the show?
Well, when I started on a show, I decided to call my show Raisin and the Rice Pudding.
Oh, so that was the name of the show.
Yes. Because
I can understand why.
Yes. I was the first.
I guess being in Toronto and being in that environment.
Back then, it was.
And you were the jewel in the crown.
I had a wonderful time.
And I just want to tell my listeners and you, Phyllis, a little bit about Sharon. Sharon is actually of Jamaican parents.
Hi,
Sharon. Mom is not on the show tonight.
No, she actually had to attend a funeral. One of our family members passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Accept our
yeah.
condolences.
Thank you so much.
But as you can hear, Phyllis, by Sharon's accent, she's a product of London.
Yes.
She was born in London. But she, too, is doing some wonderful work on behalf of Jamaica, Jamaicans, and, of course, people of African heritage.
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, what I was saying is I'm just recounting my love story with Jamaica. It seems that the country has me under its spell. And so I'm telling people about my experiences in Jamaica. And I'm surprised that it's getting quite good, you know, receipt and getting quite good feedback from it. So it's encouraging me to write more of my little vignettes, my little story.
And you must see, if you haven't seen it yet, a movie called Life and Debt.
I've seen it. I have the video upstairs. I have the DVD. My organization actually bought the movie. We
yes.
bought it to the Bronx, and we showed it to the community. It's one of the movies that I'm just blown away by.
And it's history, because it shows how globalization has brought about changes to Jamaica. And so once we're armed with the truth, we can
the truth will set you free.
The truth does set one free.
But
you
actually,
know.
It's interesting you should bring about that point, because there's actually, I believe, a movement starting in the diaspora where
mm-hmm.
we're going to actually see people from outside of Jamaica showing the way that we should be going in Jamaica and the direction that Jamaicans should be taking in terms of being self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
That movement is actually, it's germinating, and it's actually, I think, the way to go.
There are always good people stepping out, because I saw Schlesinger, your American Schlesinger, on the TV the other night talking about why these people are hijacking ships, the Somalian people. And
uh-huh.
it is that luxury liners from big countries are just dumping all their toxic waste out there. Their
mm-hmm.
people,
mm-hmm.
their mouths bleeding and
mm-hmm.
being poisoned. And because he said that, I am sure this is why the response we have today, where they're actually taking food to Somalia and so on, because he ended it saying, now that the world is aware that they're doing this outside of Somalia, it will speak out against it. But unfortunately, there are many other places that they can go and do the same thing.
Exactly.
So there's a growing awareness all around the world that poverty does have its negative effects on people. And we are all born with good minds if we came out of healthy bodies. But if big countries are poisoning small countries, then
there will be repercussions. Exactly, exactly.
Always.
But I think it speaks to the fact that we as humans need to have more of an awareness of the planet in which we live.
Yes.
And we need to be sustaining that planet because that's what's giving us life.
That's right.
I wanted to mention to our listeners the choice of what you called your magnificent piece of art that's on display. And it's Out of Chaos Order.
Yes.
And I wondered how you were inspired to come up with that theme.
Well, I think I have a very pragmatic streak in me. And the whole business of Garrett A. Morgan, he saw an accident, the newfangled car and the old horse and buggy. And he thought, I can solve this problem. So the chaos that was being caused with the arrival of the car, Ford, he brought the order with the traffic signal. And in 1923, General Electric bought the patent right from him and spread it all over the world, the traffic signals. There's so many contributions that we have made, like... and because we carry the slave master's names, lots of times people don't know, because I like to tell the story of Ernest Matsiliga, who came into the United States from Guyana with this name, you see? And then the uppers and lowers of shoes were sewn on by hand. But he thought, I can invent a machine. And so he did. And this is what revolutionized the entire shoemaking industry of the United States of America. This came from this black man.
From Guyana.
From Guyana. And I think you now have a stamp there honoring him in the U.S. So our contributions from the small ironing board that Sarah Boone invented to, you know, large and complex things. I love the story of a Nigerian man, Philip Emeagwali, who won what is equivalent to the Nobel Peace Prize, the Gordon Bell Award, because he was the only person who could program this $5 million computer there at NASA to find out how fast an oil slick was traveling to destroy the fish and so on. And the thing that just blows me away when I'm struggling with my little Vista here, my computer, I say this man could have been in a refugee camp as a child, entered the United States at about 11 with very little education, taught himself calculus, all these things that I wouldn't even begin to try to do. I surely can struggle with my little computer.
Oh, is that something? And in saying that, I always like to reach out, because, you know, people come by the Blog Talk Radio later on and listen to the archived show. So we know that, you know, people are going to be listening in to this. And incidentally, Phyllis, you will be in cyberspace, you know, forever. Cyberspace will go away. So,
immortality.
yes. We're trying to encourage our seniors to really not let this new technology frighten them or scare them, and have them to join us in the backyard, both on the radio or by going to our website and building a profile. You know, we have little operations there that behave just like Facebook, and seniors might be a little intimidated by that. It's not just for the young people. And what we're trying to do in the backyard is to have people of like minds that have stories to share, with one another. As a matter of fact, someone from the JamaicaDiaspora.com, that young lady had asked me to help her start a book club featuring Jamaican artists. And the first book that she suggested was Lover's Leap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's written, you know, there's an area in Jamaica that there is a...
Trenta
Beach. Story about, you know, two slaves that jumped off the cliff. Are you familiar with that story?
Yes.
You are. And I have not been able to reach her to get all the details, but I would like to ask the listeners that are interested in books to perhaps go to her website, JamaicaDiaspora.com. The book is on sale there, and it's not a lot of money. I think it's $15 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to be collecting the names of the people who want to sort of discuss it and talk about, you know, the story. But I am saying that to say, you know, we of our generation, and we're coming a long way, as you know, Phyllis,
yes.
from no lights to faster than light.
Yes.
Know what I mean?
Yes.
And we have an opportunity to leave a living legacy. People can hear our voices and read our stories if we would only tell them.
Well, I think this is a marvelous idea that you have, because I think, as Marcus Garvey said, up mighty race. It is our business to uplift ourselves and our culture and our homeland, the place where we were born, and always to be showing the very best that we can about our country. Because it is our country. And on Sundays, I go to the Royal Ontario Museum to teach my enameling. And I feel good about this, that I'm passing on
mm-hmm.
my heritage. Because people say a lot of times to me, oh, you don't sound like a Jamaican. I said, have you spoken to all Jamaicans?
Right, thank you.
Exactly.
Because I am here in Canada, and I can identify different Canadians, those who came from, you know, this space on the ladder, those who came from this place on the ladder, so and so. So have you spoken to all Jamaicans?
Right.
Every country has the same dynamics. You have the upper class, the middle class, the burgeoning poor, underprivileged, the downtrodden, whatever you want to say. And that is how it is with every country in the world. And
mm-hmm.
so why decide about anybody's country, that it's just the kinds that you meet that is the only representation of that country? So
well, I have had situations where people say to me, you don't sound like a Jamaican.
I want to add that people say the same thing, that I don't sound like I come from Georgia. So,
well, that's exactly what Phyllis was saying. You know, that any country is made up of different types of people and
yes,
different backgrounds, and everybody's culture has good and bad and different. I don't want to call anything good and bad, but different.
Right.
You know, people that are different. And so we'd like to ask the people who can relate to what we're trying to do in the Backyard Labrish to become part of our community, because at least we have things in common from our past that we can discuss that I think will be beneficial for the future generation.
And I just want to say, Ms. Marshall, that, you know, your program is so edifying. And I think people are listening, but they may be a bit shy to call in, because certainly I know my friends say, we listen to the show and it's really interesting.
Oh, well, thank you.
They are out there. They are out there.
People are out there. They're just shy about talking
to call in.
You know.
But this show is certainly wonderful, because it's talking about the richness of our culture in such
yes.
a positive way. And
yes.
it's edifying people to know that, you know what, our country, wow, I didn't know we had Jamaicans at Howard University in the 1800s. Because
uh-huh.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know either.
Until I found it. We need to take back the good that is Jamaica and start promoting that.
Oh, yes. And that is what I'm for. And I want to thank Donna for being a good supporter. And I want to thank all our listeners for their support. You know, we've had over 2,000 downloads, you know, which is people going by the shows, Phyllis, afterwards and just listening.
Marvelous.
Wow.
Yes. So I wanted to celebrate our 2,000 breakthrough. So this is a special day for us.
Wonderful.
Wow.
Wonderful. Congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations
excellent.
On a wonderful idea and for seeing it through.
Well, thank you so much, and I thank you for being part of it. And we have 5 more minutes left. So any of our listeners that might want to say something, I see a hand raised, so I'm going to open it up, open up the mic. So 786, you're on. Welcome to the backyard.
Hello, Miss Margaret.
Hello there, Miss Winifred.
Oh, boy, I have been listening, and it is so interesting, and it's so wonderful to hear Miss Phyllis.
Be careful, you know. Be careful.
Well, may I say something now, as we would say in Jamaica, story comes from.
I am going to tell this story. I'm going to tell this story on her on the air when she met her husband. His name was Julio, and you know we have a lovely mango called Julie in Jamaica.
Right.
And saying, I wonder about him. I said, grab him up. Him look like a nice Julie to me. So I've kept up that joke for years, you know.
And he has been a wonderful Julie.
There you go.
His old age is getting sweeter.
All right. Oh, that is wonderful. Well, we only have a couple minutes left. I want to thank all our listeners online and our listeners calling in, and to remind you that we're here each week, and Phyllis, it's just been a joy to have you on, and we hope you'll come back again and tell us more about your just very passionate life, and
thank
I hope
you so
we'll
much.
Encourage your senior friends that they need to tune in and listen to your show and listen to us in the backyard and come back anytime you want.
And as Miss Lou would say, walk good.
That's right. Walk good.
Thank you so much.
So, Miss,
all the best.
Miss Donna, you want to say some parting words?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes.
I can.
Okay, wonderful. Well, just wanted to say that first and foremost that one of the things that's really neat about it is the legacy aspect. Not only are you doing things where you're planting seeds in these young people that you're mentoring and taking around each year, you're planting seeds in terms of your classes that you're offering at the Royal Ontario Museum and donating, you know, artwork here and there that you've created to leave your legacy, but you've also now contributed to the backyard, backyardlabbers.com, and the backyard here on Blog Talk Radio, and leaving your footprint, which is something that we, you know, definitely firmly believe in, is leave your own footprint. You know, it's something, if
yeah.
I come and I put my foot, you know, I wear a size 11, my foot might be a lot bigger than yours, and I took my story of you with my footprint. I mean, it's just not going to be the same as you telling the story from your own wonderful voice and dialect and sharing, to have an opportunity to hear you and hear your laughter and hear your love of language and art and just your passion has just been so wonderful, and I just want to thank you for, you know, taking the time and sharing you with us in the backyard.
Well, thank you so much for those encouraging words, Donna, and it's been a pleasure meeting you too on air.
All right, and I look forward to meeting you in person, Phyllis.
One of these days I might come down there.
I have
a few all over the place.
Left. Yes, and I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank you, Miss Winifred, for tuning in from Florida. And we had some callers from New York, and Phyllis is calling all the way from Toronto. And we thank you so much for sharing this time with us in the backyard. And we will look forward to welcoming you again. So until next week, this is Margaret and the rest of the gang saying, walk good.
Walk good.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wonderful. Bye-bye.